everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we write about RV and family travel with our three boys, Theo, Max, and Wes.
You can read about our adventures at RVFamilyTravelAtlas.com, and you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
On this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas, we are talking to our favorite podcast correspondents, Brett and Carrie, who also took epic RV trips this summer.
Brett Nielsen from the great state of Utah headed up to Glacier National Park and has some great campground reviews and suggestions for hikes and family activities.
Carrie Cox from the great state of Missouri hitched up her travel trailer and drove west to see the grandeur of Yosemite. How did her family fare on this 25-day tour de force? Listen to find out.
And we are delighted to have Go RVing back as our RV FTA sponsor. Listen for a message from them just a bit later in our show. To find your way, head on over to GoRVing.com/RVFTA.
Well, we thought we were all that and a campfire s'more with our 34-day trip to the Great Smokies. But there were plenty of other families out there seeing this big, beautiful country in grand RV style. Those stories are coming your way on episode 48, Dispatches from Glacier and Yosemite.
Before we head into this week's feature topic, Dispatches from Glacier and Yosemite, we have our RV FTA news roundup. What do you got?
All right, so quick rundown on the dates again. We're reminding you every week of the dates that are coming up in the fall because we're going to be at the Hershey Show, America's largest.
The world's largest RV show.
Pardon. Okay, the world's largest
they
RV
show. They kennel your dogs there.
Yeah, we.
Okay, if you have a dog. And you show up, you can pay a fee, and they will kennel your dog.
Do they kennel Because
they
their
want
kids?
You. That would be amazing.
We should start that.
I
we
know.
We should just start
we
doing
should forget presenting
daycare.
And hanging out with these companies.
At
and just
RV
do kid
shows.
Daycare at RV
yeah,
shows.
We break it in.
Pop on a movie.
All right. Or somebody else out there can take that idea and run with it.
And we're not trying to tease you, but we don't know the exact details yet.
Right. It's coming. But, right,
but we'll let you know.
September 16th to September 20th, that's when the RV show is, and we'll be there in that time frame. So then also, very important dates coming up. In October, our rally, our fall rally is October 23rd and 24th.
RVFTA rally number two.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the thing is spots are actually limited. Going
we're not
like
trying,
hotcakes.
We're not. The spots are going like hotcakes.
Right.
There's only a couple spots left.
Yeah.
Okay. If those spots get booked, there is a slim chance I can block off some more.
Yeah.
But no guarantee. So if you want to come, you do need to get on it.
Yeah. I know it sounds, you know, look, I'm one of those people. I'm like, it's October. I can't think about October. It's August. But actually, if you do want to go, you really should reserve.
It's one of their themed Halloween weekends. So the campground was already crowded when
yeah.
I
Yeah, and we
off
didn't
the
want
spots.
To block off more sites than we needed. So anyway, but what we're saying is we yeah. know that they're almost all gone.
Like 80 to 90% yeah. of the sites
yeah.
are gone. Okay,
yeah,
so if you so want to come, we would love to have you come.
Okay.
Call and reserve and then send us an email so we know that mm-hmm. you are actually coming.
And then you'll be on our email list for all the
yeah,
details.
Yeah, and if you have kids, you know, bring them. And there's, I guess, there's trick-or-treating Saturday
yes.
night. So
yeah.
and campground trick-or-treating's really fun.
Oh, we loved it last
okay,
year.
Okay, so your
yeah.
kids can get twice as much candy, twice as much sugar, and twice as much crazy.
Rah-rah. Okay.
And there's other cool activities that weekend, too.
Right. And then our spring rally. Let's just give those dates out, too.
It sounds crazy.
It does, but we have people that are already booked for that,
here's
too.
The deal. If we want to have a rally and have all these sites together, we got to block them off early.
Yeah.
Okay?
And not only that, but we got a lot of – we really did get a lot of emails from people from really – places that are kind of far away even.
Yeah.
About last year, like saying, you know, we couldn't come this
but
year.
But we really want to come this year.
We'd like to come.
Yeah, people
so...
from Chicago, people
yes.
from down south.
Right. So then we were like, okay, well, the fair is fair. If we're going to have people yeah. that are willing to travel, then we need to book
so
it
I
advance.
Blocked off a good group of sites, and we emailed everybody that came to last year's rally to give them first chance to get their site back. Okay, so we did show them a little favoritism.
Yeah.
And if you come, we'll show you that favoritism
too.
But there are definitely a nice number of sites available for the Lake and Wood Spring Rally.
Yeah.
It's really early summer rally.
June 3rd to 4th.
June 3rd and 4th. So book your site.
Yeah, it's kind of, I think it's already going to be tradition that we do it the week.
The weekend after Memorial Day, because it seems like everybody's got stuff going on Memorial Day, and nobody really plans anything weekend after.
Yeah, and the weekend before, a lot of times people are getting ready for things, too. So anyway, we thought that's a good time, so we'll see. All right.
And everyone loved Lake and Wood. Everyone loved rallying at Lake and Wood.
Because it was awesome.
It was awesome.
It really was.
It was awesome. It was a great place for a
group. We've got a great article that was published on the Progressive blog
and
this week.
What is that website again, dear?
So it's at, as in the words, at.progressive.com.
And it's a beautiful blog.
It is.
It's really, they make our posts look so nice
they
and pretty.
They do a really good job.
They do.
And they put up a picture as the header. If you go over
it's like the
to
whole
the
whole screen is a picture of New Hampshire and the boys on the top of a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Looks great.
It's not just like on the top of our blog post.
Yeah.
It's actually at the top of the whole blog.
Right.
And it's the picture of the boys, just Max and Theo.
On the top of Bald Mountain, I think, in New Hampshire.
Yeah, in New Hampshire last summer. And
gorgeous photo. I wonder who took it.
Up there. Okay. Jeremy took it for all those who
couldn't
tell.
Like they could reach out and grab the clouds.
Yeah. But the article is about the reasons why we believe RVing is good for our children. And we've talked about that before on this podcast. But we pretty much like summed it up in four different reasons. But just in looking at that picture, I had such a moment where I realized, yeah, okay, we wrote this article and we said four reasons. But then looking at that picture, that to me is a reason. It's like they don't even appreciate what they're experiencing now, but you know what? They're going to remember that. Like, and even if they kind of don't remember it, even if it's like a faint
memory, they're
going to
look back and see those photos and go, oh my gosh, I did that when I was 5 years old.
So that was like,
you can show their girlfriends one day. Look what I was doing when I was 5.
Yeah. So head on over to the Progressive blog, check it out. And then if you have any reasons that we missed, put it in the comments below.
Yeah, drop us a comment.
We'll reply to it, say like, oh yeah, and this reason. So we like that. So anyway, we also have another thing that I wanted to mention is a blog post up on the Good Sam blog this week. Now, the editors for the blog over at Good Sam reached out to us and told us that they were starting reviews on their website.
For Good Sam Campgrounds.
Yes.
Right.
And this is a pretty big
positive
deal.
Step.
Mm-hmm. I really like this. So they actually reached out to us and said, would you be willing to like write the blog posts to sort
of explaining how this is going
to
work.
Explain to people what to do and why it's
and
important.
And why it's valuable, right.
Right. And so we did actually. There's a series of three different blog posts and the first one was put up this week. And I just really encourage everybody out there, if you have a Good Sam park that you like,
right.
Go over
and drop
find,
a review.
If you find the park, you can leave a review. You can read my blog post, the first one, to see how to do that. But we recommend reviews so much on this show. We tell our listeners all the time, if you book a campsite without reading all the reviews, like, don't complain
right.
when you're disappointed.
Yeah,
like, you
there's a
have
lot of information out there, you know,
yeah.
And this is a way for you to kind of chime in.
Yeah. But not only that, but like the more people leave reviews, the more information you're going to have.
The more valid it
but
becomes.
But it's authentic.
Yeah.
When it's on the Good Sam and people have to log in to be able to leave that review and there's accountability, you can have more faith in the review. So I like those systems. I like how KOA has an internal review system.
I think ultimately these systems and these reviews force campgrounds to sharpen up and really make themselves better.
Yeah. Or at least, you know what? And the ones...
Makes the industry stronger.
Yeah. And the ones, you know, some of them ignore them or just like fight with them. But I think that a lot of campground owners out there are like, oh, I didn't realize that might be a problem for people. Let me work on that or let me tweak that.
Or I got to fix this pronto.
Yeah.
Or I have a big problem.
Just make sure that people expect this, you know, when they come. Because sometimes it's all about expectations. So anyway, go on over there. And then lastly, over on the Greater Outdoors, if any of you signed up for that newsletter that they have, you would have seen our blog post.
KOA's Greater Outdoors.
Yeah. They sent out their newsletter and we were in it and we're up on the blog for Family Fun Time Outdoor Games and Activities. So we're there too. So we're kind of all over the place. Go read our articles.
Except on our own blog.
Yeah, exactly. And you all know that story. And I guess we're going to, like, let the cat out of the bag.
Yeah, we're going to let the cat out of the bag. I sent an email to our editor.
Yeah, right.
Our editor at Penguin Random House. I'm sorry. I just like to say that.
Well, so, right.
And then
so,
said, hey, can we just tell everybody what we're doing here? And she's like, well, the book's already for sale on Amazon.
She said so it's up now. So
you can go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
So,
it's up.
We've been
Amazon.
Talking about this book that we've been writing all summer, but now we're going to tell you what it is. So Stephanie and I are co-authoring The Idiot's Guide to RV Vacations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
like,
we're,
as in The Idiot's Guide.
Yeah,
like those books, The Idiot's Guides.
In the series of Idiot's Guides.
Yeah.
And we're pretty excited about it.
Yeah.
And we're approaching being done.
The final deadline is August 31st. We're
at 11:59 p.m.
Yeah.
Before Labor Day.
We're almost there. We've stayed on track, even with all the travel.
We have stayed in track. We have been writing while on the road.
So we're not suggesting that you go and pre-order a book that's
coming
out in
May. Why would you go and pre-order a book that's coming out May 3rd? You could. Okay.
But
I,
just
you know
so
what?
You
know what it is? If you pre-order it, you'll forget that you ordered it, and then it'll be like a really nice
surprise.
And it's a full color book, which I'm incredibly excited about. So this is going to be a really attractive book with photos from all these great destinations and locations.
Right. The layout of it is really
It looks really,
really
good. We really like the format of the book.
Obviously a lot of it hasn't come together yet. It's still in the working process, but they've done enough like the mock up of one that we did and everything. We were like, "Wow, look at that."
It looks like a real book.
It's been a fun process.
Yeah.
It's been an incredibly
And I'm pretty pumped I'll have some of my photographs in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very excited.
Yep. Okay.
So we'll be back in a second with a sponsored message from our friends over at Go RVing. And now it's time for a sponsored message from our friends over at Go RVing.
Have you visited Go RVing's brand new Away microsite?
We have, and we love the collection of adventures that they've gathered together there. You can find them at away.goRVing.com.
From the mountains to the sea and from wine country to Alaska, you'll find inspirational videos that tell the stories of real people who have hit the road in their RVs.
To watch the latest adventure, head on over to away.goRVing.com on your laptop, tablet, or smartphone.
There are over 4 million miles of road in the United States. Some lead you home and some take you away.
Find your away. Go RVing. And we checked out the videos.
Yeah, well,
of course.
Yeah, we watched them. We started watching them because we have the YouTube on our TV.
That's right. And we watched them when they came out a month or so ago.
I want to say this. We have listeners who may be trying to convince a spouse to get an RV.
Yeah, play them these little micro adventures. The music will sweep you away.
Mm-hmm.
The cinematography is gorgeous.
Right.
Which is your favorite adventure?
Oh, you know, I remember watching the beach one and like watching the family like running
Makes
around
you
on the beach.
Makes you want to drive cross country to California.
It was the Western Coast, right? The West Coast. And you're just sitting there watching it and you're just like, yeah, that's why we do it. Oh, better get out there to the West Coast beach and run around and fly
so there's
kite
a collection
the beach.
Of, there's something like 17 short videos. Mm-hmm. These are what, 2 to 3 minute videos?
Yeah, they're very short.
Yeah, really beautifully done.
Nicely emotional.
Very emotional. And then if you scroll down right below the video, there's sort of like an interactive map and there's some still photos.
Yeah.
It's actually very cool. It's kind of a very fun microsite.
You go there, check them out. Now, there's also the ones that for all of our family RVers, out there, you can watch the couples go on their trips
to
like
wine country. Right.
And what you need
take
to
take their like really relaxing trips.
Yeah. And what you need to realize there is just that's supposed to inspire you to maybe dream about your future
retirement.
Or maybe some take, you know, get a babysitter and go on your date.
There are family videos there too. And I really loved one of the New School Nomads videos where they go kayaking out to this island in British Columbia. And it's gorgeous, just really gorgeous video work, kind of really nice, gentle music in the background.
Another way to add to your bucket list.
Yeah,
right?
So all head right. on over there, away.goRVing.com. And we'll be back in a second to introduce our featured topic tonight, dispatches from Glacier and Yosemite. We are really excited to share these segments. Pumped for tonight's feature topic, dispatches from Glacier and Yosemite. And we're really going to turn the show over to Brett Nielsen and to Carrie Cox. So we interviewed both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually kind of like shut up and let them talk, I think, to some degree, because we were just
miracle.
Spellbound by hearing about Glacier and Yosemite, which are just like these like far, far away magical mm-hmm. places to us. So we're just really thankful to both of them for coming back on the show and sharing their big family adventures this summer. So really, without further ado, let's head into the first one. Brett Nielsen talking about his trip to Glacier National Park. And then we're going to go right into Carrie Cox's segment about her big 25-day trip to Yosemite with all kinds of stops along the way. And they're both going to share their favorite memories from those trips. And we're really excited for you guys to take a listen.
All right.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the show. We are incredibly excited to be here with our veteran correspondent, Brett Nielsen
Almost
from Utah.
Almost like a long-lost correspondent.
long-lost correspondent.
So long. Yeah.
Still yet to meet in person.
It's been too long. So, yeah, and we're going to have to do that. But we need to catch up with you and your big summer adventures. First of all, how are you?
Doing great. How are you guys doing? It sounds like you're just back from a whirlwind trip that you hit a lot of places and covered a lot of miles.
34 nights.
Seven
campgrounds. Yeah, it was, you know, a pretty concentrated tour of the southern states.
Yes,
but,
it was.
But we're not here to talk about that.
No.
We're here to talk about Brett and his family.
And his wild, wild west.
And Glacier. So Glacier. Give us just like a little overview of the trip in broad terms.
Yeah, so the highest level, the total loop that we did was just short of about 1,400 miles. And so it took us from our home in Salt Lake City, Utah, up to Glacier National Park and back down. We did that in a couple of different jumps just due to the length of time that it would take us to get up there. It's about a 10-hour drive if we were to do it straight, and we all agreed that was a little bit too long to stay in the car for one time. So we jumped up for a first night at a campground and then jumped up to the park, stayed there for a couple nights, jumped down to another park that we like, and then back to our house. So
now were you happy that you did the overnights? Because we always like borderline argue about whether we're going to, you know, spend the night somewhere.
You know, it was the right decision. So the first night, so we drove for 6 hours, and that's where we terminated for the first night. And that was definitely the right decision. We were all pooped. We were all ready to get out of the car.
Oh, yeah. Six hours, just so you know, if you
were
questioning.
That's about our, yeah.
I think that is such a common, like, family
totally.
With kids cap out.
The kids start to go bonkers after 6 hours. It's like every time.
Yeah.
Well, and we had the advantage. We were traveling with some other family members, and so every time we stopped for a little break or a snack or something like that, we would rotate cars. And so there were different conversations going on in each of the cars, and so people could rotate back and forth. And obviously, you've got respective drivers of each vehicle, but everybody else kind of moved around as we would stop, and that, which changed the dynamic and made it go by a little bit faster.
Okay, freshen up the scenery.
So,
Got it.
Thoughtful, Brett. Such a thoughtful traveler.
It sounds like Brett was traveling with an entourage, to be quite frank.
That's right. I've got my crew with me, right?
Oh, my gosh. So tell us about the campground that you chose in Glacier National Park and what you liked about it.
Yeah, so the campground we stayed there was the Fish Creek Campground, there's quite a few campgrounds in Glacier. There's 13 different campgrounds total, but only two of them are actually reservable. And we're a little bit spooked on a non-reserved campground.
Yep, as our way.
Loading everything in the car, kids. You head out and no reservations. Mm-hmm. That just doesn't add up in our mind. And so we went to Fish Creek, and that was on the advice of one of my coworkers that had stayed there and said it was a great campground. Clued us in on the sites that he liked there, and so we jumped into those sites and really enjoyed our stay there. It's a good, well placed campground on the west side of the park, and we really couldn't have asked for a better setup while we were there. So,
how early in advance did you book?
Let's see. We booked back towards the beginning of the year.
You did. Is the word on the street that you need to do that to get in there? Was it sold out?
It does fill up. A lot of the national parks this year, it's funny, we were having a conversation last year about unsold, cause they'll reserve a lot of the, sites for walk-ups. And obviously here at Glacier, you got 13 campgrounds that are available. Only two you can reserve. But I've started to see some of the national parks showing their stats online as far as what campgrounds are available and what time of day they're filling up.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just started to see this. Yellowstone sent out an email that they started doing it, and I saw it today. I was poking around and saw it today for Glacier. So looking like right now, the St. Mary's campground on the east side of the park is actually open and has a availability. So you could show up there right this very moment and get there. And they're posting times, like one of them filled up at 7 p.m., one of them filled up at 2, one of them filled up at 5:30. So if you are going to chance it and you have some of this information, you can look at it and say, okay, this one filled up yesterday at 5:30, it filled up today at 5:50. So if I get there around 2 or 3 tomorrow, there's a good chance I'm still going to get a site.
Now, Brett, do you have links that you can send us for that we could post for people so they could follow us? Because we'll put that in the show notes email that. Okay.
Yeah, I can send it over. It's really cool, and more of the parks are starting to do it, which is really nice. There's usually a board there at the campgrounds that they'll tell you, but I'm starting to see them online, which is great if you're trying to plan some sort of jumping trip. And I know what a lot of people will do is they'll jump into one that's a reservation for the first night, mm-hmm. and then they'll use that to get in the park and then jump to another one the next morning that's a non-reserve and get maybe a better spot or something to that effect.
This is the exact type of inside information that we want to provide our RVFTA listeners. Thank you.
But that's just such an interesting point too, that our national parks, we've talked about them being woefully outdated in some ways for the new RV, generation and culture. But you can see these little steps that they're taking to try to address the way that our generation RVs, people want to pick up their phone and have some sort of ability to tap in to what is going on in these campgrounds. So it's such an interesting thing to follow.
Yeah. And obviously redoing the campgrounds is a big deal, right? If you want to take it to be able to take a 40-foot RV into a site. That's a big undertaking. Doing something like this is, in my thought, coming from the technology world, this is a fairly simple thing.
Right.
And makes all the sense in the world. Mm-hmm. It gives people a lot of peace of mind to say, hey, I could camp at those other ones, and I don't have to have reservations.
On that topic, was there a maximum rig length in the park, or did you notice any big rigs at all, or was it mostly smaller units?
No, mostly smaller. Nothing, definitely no Class A's or anything like that in the campgrounds that we saw, and I didn't see any in the park overall. We were traveling with a 28-foot. We had ours, which is a 20-foot, and then we had a 28-foot with us as well. And no problems getting those in. You start, crossing over that 30-foot mark, that's when you start getting that questionable. And I didn't look to see what the max site length was of what we could have got, but based on the sites that we were in, you could have easily gotten a 30-foot, 32-foot.
That's nice, Brett, because
I feel like you always throw our trailer length in our
When Brett shows up at a campground, after he sets up his rig, he goes around, he measures sites that maybe
we could use.
Phantom sites for us. It does seem like it's that 30-foot mark, though, you start to get into trouble if you're over 30-foot. And, I mean, there are plenty of rigs under 30 feet, but then an awful lot of people have rigs over 30 feet.
feet. It's like a real dividing line in the industry as well.
So for bunks and beds and couches and tables, you're in that 30 plus foot mark. I mean, that's just the way it is.
So true. So what was your site like? Was it pull through, back in? What did it look like?
So that was the cool part about the loop that we were in. And I didn't go into the other loops and really check them out too much for the campground that we were in, but all of ours were pull through, every single one of them in there, which was really nice. Mm-hmm. It sets up with a lot of space between you and your neighbor. Just by the nature of a pull through, you've got a kind of a wider site. And so there was really good spacing. Everything was easy in, easy out of all the sites. The roads all there in the campground are asphalt. Then the actual sites themselves are all dirt. And so that's one thing that I like, a more of an asphalt concrete site, but in this rustic of kind of an area, you know, I understand we can easily deal with the dirt sites, but it was definitely nice to have the paved roads around on the campground. So
how about the physical kind of beauty of the campground? I mean, what are you looking at from your site?
Trees everywhere.
Trees. Okay. Yeah. So deeply wooded.
Yeah. When I'm looking for a campground, you know, I usually get on, like a lot of people, on Google, and you'll start searching around. I get the satellite view, and if I can't find the campground from the satellite view, that's where I want to be. I like the tree coverage. Right now, if we were a big solar family and needed a big solar array, this campground would not be the place, because it is. We were in the shade the entire day. You know, little bits of light coming through, but it made for a really nice break from any kind of heat or sun or anything of that nature.
What were temperatures like for you?
They were hotter than seasonal average there by far. So we were in the mid 80s when we were there, which was just fine. Yes. The weekend before we were there, they hit 104 in the park.
Whoa.
Yeah, really, really hot. So unseasonably warm throughout the time that
glaciers were melting.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, if you want to go to Glacier, people,
yeah,
there
now's the time.
That sounds crazy.
Yeah. So our weather was very good. It was very, very nice. The rains and all that kind of stuff had held off, and so it was just beautiful while we were there.
Any ranger-led type programs in the campground, or was it really pretty, you know, bare bones in terms of stuff going on at the campground?
Yeah, you know, they do the traditional stuff. There's every night they have an amphitheater in the campground, and they have a ranger led talk. And so the first night that we were there, we went down to the talk, and they were talking about the group that actually built the campground and the history behind them and all the different things they did in Glacier at the time, building the different fire watch towers and building out the campground. And so it was just kind of covering the history, the long-term history of around the group known as the CCC that actually built out the campground and build out a lot of campgrounds around America.
That sounds thrilling for a six-year-old.
Well, you know, she did really good.
Is she six? I just made that up.
No, six is the right age.
Okay, good.
She did really good. She had some rocks and was kind of trying to polish them, and she entertained herself, which was awesome. So
throw the rocks at the rangers.
Exactly. So
why don't we talk about some? And is there anything else in the campground you wanted to throw in? Help yourself if you do.
No, that's really it for the campground. The campground's pretty straightforward. National park campground. You know, there's a lot of sites there. Different loops have different rules. And then in the park itself, you know, just tons of hikes and all kinds of fun things to do.
Give us some highlights from your time in the national park. What were some of your favorite things, some of the best memories?
Yeah, so one of the things that we tried to do is looking at Glacier and trying to figure out what we were going to do. It really led itself as a hiking destination, and when we got there, that's really true. You got to go and be prepared to hike. You know, somewhere like Yellowstone, you can park the car and go over and see the geyser or something. There's a lot of point things to go see. Here, it's trails and hiking, and so we knew that going in. And so we'd kind of been prepping my daughter and trying to get her to walk farther and go on bigger hikes. And so we did our longest hike that we've done, which was a 5 mile round trip.
Awesome
hike, and she did awesome. It was a great hike. It was definitely one of the highlights of it. And most of the hikes here have some type of termination point where you're going to a big lake or a waterfall or something like that. So you get the reward at the end of that hike. And of the hikes that we did two different ones, and both were stellar in our book. One was the it was called the Avalanche Lake hike. That was the big long one, which is a 5 mile round trip, and the other one was the Hidden Lake Overlook, which was 2.7 miles, but everybody felt it was actually harder than the 5 mile
that
hike.
That happens a lot.
More elevation or more picking through rocks? What made it harder?
No, it must have been like the angle, and it was just exposed. So the Avalanche Lake hike, you are covered by trees the entire time, so you're in the shade. The Hidden Lake Overlook, you're exposed and on like a boardwalk going up this hillside. And I think that's what led to it, is that the steepness of the boardwalk and then just being exposed, not in any kind of tree cover.
I find it so interesting to hear you say that, because I think that the length of a hike is so much less important than, the trail, how the trail is, the elevation, the climb, the water features, all of those things end up being a lot more important.
So it sounds like two great family-friendly picks.
Yeah.
Knowing you, go ahead.
Well, no, I want to say, wait, I'm going to jump in. And I'm going to say congratulations to Brett, because I think I remember you saying to us, I don't know if it was on air or not, that one of your spring camping resolutions when we did that was to hike longer distances with your daughter, right?
Yep, exactly.
Yes, and you did.
You go.
And she did. Yeah, she came through with flying colors.
That's
so
awesome. 5 miles is awesome, a solid, so. That's a solid
All right,
hike. With
fist
this
it is. All
yeah,
right.
Fist
go
bump.
Ahead. Now I'm
done. So one of the cool things about the Avalanche Lake hike is it's, you get to it from a hike called Trail of the Cedars, which Trail of the Cedars is a 1 mile loop that's fully ADA accessible. So you can actually take a wheelchair all the way around that hike. And it goes through some really old cedar forest where some of the trees are, 500 plus years old, which is really cool to just see and kind of walk through that area, even if you don't jump off onto the Avalanche Lake Trail. So it's kind of a 2-for-1 when you do that. You start one half of the Trail of the Cedars, go up Avalanche Lake, and then come back to the other side of Trail of the Cedars. So
now, I'm guessing you were thinking about bear safety.
Yes, yeah, there's bears in the campground, not bears in the campground, but obviously bears in the park, hopefully not in the campground. And so you have to be bear aware when you're out there. Keep your food locked up, and that we carry bear spray and have bells and all that kind of stuff that we have when we're out on hikes. Usually on these populated trails, there's enough activity that bears aren't going to go around there, but you never know. You can come around a corner and there could be something there that you might not want to be face to face with, and so you do have to be a little bit aware of what's going on.
That's good for people to know. And when we go to Glacier, I don't think I'm going to be picking the most remote hikes to take with my kids. Now, let me ask a dumb question for a Jersey boy here. You brought the bell. I mean, are you guys like ringing the bell as you hike, or what? Noise keeps them away, right?
Right. Yeah. So the theory behind the bell is, and there's conflicting studies out there, but the theory is you don't want to startle the bear. Mm-hmm. So by making noise, the bear will hear you before it gets, you get too close, and then it'll take off. You can accomplish the same thing by talking or clapping your hands.
So let's be clear on this. I've known about the bell thing, but my children
are so loud
that I
you have
feel
built-in bells.
No ability, like no reason to carry
I just feel
a
like
bell.
We could charge other families and say, look, we will hike with you and you will be
that's
safe.
That's right. You're safe.
Your
we will scare
spray.
Everything away. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so that's the theory behind it is, and I just have it on my backpack and have it attached to the back. And then, and there were several other people that I saw with the bells. The bells to me are they're not really that loud. So I don't know that it actually provides that much value. The Hidden Lake Overlook hike, we did encounter wildlife on that, and they seemed indifferent to anything we were doing, let alone the bell ringing. So, the wildlife there, we're standing right next to the trail that you walk by.
Don't doubt the bell, Brett. You didn't see a bear, man.
I didn't, and so maybe it was working. So,
are there any other highlights in the park? Anything else you did that you loved and would recommend? Otherwise, we could talk about Grey Poupon.
Well, definitely the Poupon. So the Hidden Lake Overlook. So the usually I don't try to set a goal for wildlife as far as like seeing something because it's so random. But I really wanted to see a mountain goat, the white goat with the little black back horns. I really wanted to see one. And I knew that there was a chance. And I've only seen them through binoculars, but I wanted to see one up close and personal. I knew there was a chance on the Hidden Lake Overlook. And there are more mountain goats up there. Like I've seen my share. It's kind of like when you see a bison. And after you're about your 50th bison, you're good to go.
Oh,
and
that's here in Jersey. I mean, it's like, who cares?
They're bison
everywhere. Bison burgers and,
That's right. That's right. So got to see the mountain goat, which was definitely a highlight for me, and, get up close and personal with them, way closer than you're supposed to be, but they wouldn't move. You wouldn't move. They would just stand there, so you eventually have to go by them. So
sounds like there's like a deep spiritual connection between you and these.
You and the mountain goat.
You and the mountain goat.
One of the pictures I've got is a pretty good one. A mountain goat and uh, Bennett's little baby are standing out on this edge, kind of overlooking the valley, and it definitely gives you pause when you look. And that's really how Glacier is the areas there are just so massive, and it makes you feel so teeny in the grand scheme of things. So it's definitely an awakening experience going there and kind of just taking it all in. And it takes a minute to step back and look at everything and say, oh yeah, this is for real. So yeah.
Absolutely. Is that photo on Instagram? If so, I'll share it. Yeah. If not, and get it on there.
I've got a couple out there. I'll make sure that one's out there as well. So,
all right. Great. Yeah, we'll regram it.
Let's talk about passing the Grey Poupon, because Brett stayed at you did an overnight at a KOA for the first time, correct?
Yeah. So that's the campground that we chose to stay at on our way up there. We stayed at the Butte KOA, which is recently classified as a Journey KOA.
Okay. So exactly what you were using.
Exactly. Yes. We were the exact target market for it, and it was great. We pulled off the highway. It was easy to get in and out of. They had a dump station there for us. We could get food on site. We opted to eat at a local restaurant, but they had a restaurant there on the site. My daughter made use of the pool and the playground while we were there, which were great rewards after a long car ride. And so it fit the bill over and over and over again. So
now we're going to talk about the rebranding for KOA in a future episode in terms of your journey, your holiday, and your resort. So were you appreciative of that label being stamped on it? Is that meaningful to you that you knew in advance that this was really an overnight place?
Yeah, I think doing some looking. This was obviously our first KOA that we've stayed at, but it, you know, having listened to you guys and the podcast around some of the KOAs that you've stayed at, they've obviously been targeted at a different market, mm-hmm. and so I can see the value through and through from a person coming that is expecting a holiday type of type of KOA, yes. and they show up at a Journey, they're going to be very disappointed. Mm-hmm. So, you know, not to badmouth the KOA that we were at, but you know, we didn't expect much. It was by the highway. It was going to be an overnight. Like, we needed a place to hang our hat, and that's pretty much it.
But then that Journey designation gives you truth in advertising. Okay. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. But you've got all the KOA service. We walked up. The yellow shirts are there. They greeted us. It was kind of our first time ever going through that, you know, reservation, you know, coming in, and everybody was happy to see us. They jumped in the golf cart.
Were you suspicious of them at all? I mean, was this frightening to you?
At one point, as we were driving following the golf cart out to our site, my wife turned to me and said, "We just put our daughter in a golf cart with a guy we've never met."
Oh, your daughter went in the golf cart. She must have. Our boys love.
Oh,
the
they
golf
love a golf cart.
Cart. They love the golf so, cart.
It's becoming a problem,
yeah.
actually.
Yeah. yeah.
So you know, here's a strange guy in a yellow shirt giving out candy, saying, "Come ride in the golf cart with me."
Yeah.
Sure, go ahead, sweetie. It'll be fine. So yeah,
and so you passed the mythical Grey Poupon to your site neighbor. You had joked yes. Back when we had you on the show one of the other times that, you know, when you went to a KOA for the first time, you were worried the site next door would be so close yeah. that you would be able to pass the Grey yeah. Poupon. Was the site really that close?
It wasn't quite that close.
That gigantic goofy grin on your face kind of made me think that it wasn't totally legit.
Yeah, well, you obviously don't see a second trailer in there either, so I really wanted to get them close, and even if we had to stage it, but it just wasn't quite right.
You could toss the Grey Poupon yeah, to the next right. site.
Could have easily tossed the Grey Poupon between the trailers. Yeah, easily tossed. You maybe could have fit another trailer touching both of us and the trailer next to us. So there was space, but it wasn't much space at all. Definitely from a state national park perspective, we were very close together. Mm-hmm. But it, again, served its purpose. Easy in, easy out.
Yes.
We arrived in the afternoon. We left early morning. Done.
So you would do that again on a longer trip.
Honestly, Butte, we had no expectations for Butte. We want to go back and explore Butte. It's got a large mining history, a lot of copper production out of there. We want to go spend some time in Butte now and actually go research a little bit more of what's going on there. So we were pleasantly surprised by it, and the KOA there would likely be the place that we would
At some point, Brett, we're going to have the ability to be like, "Brett, that sounds great. We'll send you to Butte, okay?"
Perfect.
Like, years from now, we'll send you to Butte.
Yeah,
we'll say, go explore Butte for us, Brett, and report back.
Send us your expenses.
And if we head up to Glacier again, and we've talked about, we really covered the west side of Glacier. We really didn't get over to the east side, which now with the fire that's up there, I've been a little disappointed that we didn't get over there. But if we go back up that direction and hit the east side, we would go back up to Butte, use that as our overnight, and then jump up to the east side of the park from there. So
cool. Now let's talk about the truck and the trailer. How did everything perform heading up to Glacier in terms of you had a Nissan Xterra?
Yeah, exactly.
And
so Nissan Xterra,
your travel trailer.
Yep. And then we've got a Jayco 184BH, which is it's a 20-foot total length. It's got the bunkhouse in the back, the convertible dinette up front. And honestly, it did pretty well, but we felt it in pulling on some of those hills. We weren't, you know, sitting there over on the right waiting for the engine to cool off, felt it, but with the other family members that we were with pulling their 28-foot trailer with their pickup truck, they stayed behind us, and they were wanting to go a little bit faster than we were capable. So we definitely felt it. It made it. It survived with flying colors. However, when we got home, we started talking and said, you know, we've talked about a new travel trailer. Coming off this trip and what we experienced with towing with the Xterra, maybe it's time to look at a new acquisition. And so recently we did just trade in the Xterra, and we got ourselves a pickup truck to tow.
Brett,
tell us more. And now we're
going to
move into section two of the interview, where we talk about Brett's new truck. If you don't want to hear about his new truck, just come back in about 20 minutes.
That's right.
You got to tell us what you bought.
Yeah. So after much deliberation, I ended up with a 2015 Ford F-150.
Oh, 2015. So 2015 aluminum.
Yeah. It's the aluminum, yes.
Right. You took pictures of that. That's a beautiful truck.
So this is just a few weeks old now?
Yes, yeah, quite literally. It's I think I'm on my second week with it.
And
so
are
yeah,
you
it's
driving around the neighborhood at this point. Are you still in that stage where you're like, oh, gotta go get milk, and you just
So I'm reading through the owner's manual, right? And I'm one of those guys that actually reads through the owner's manual.
Of course you
and there's Brett, you called the purchase of the truck an acquisition.
It was an acquisition. Have you seen the price of those things?
I have, because I'm looking at them.
So there's the nice little document in there about the break-in period, but farther back in the towing section, they say you can't tow anything until you're at 1,000 miles.
Oh, really?
I've got a trip coming up. And I said, well, there's no way I'm not taking this vehicle. So I've got to get 1,000 miles on this puppy. And so we've been driving around doing loops. We've been going to the grocery store.
Pull the cops on you,
I know. What are they doing?
More importantly, have you tested the aluminum by taking a baseball bat to the truck?
Right. No.
I think Edmonds or Kelly Blue Book or somebody, one of those places, like took a bat to the truck and just went to town on it because they wanted to see if it was more expensive to have the aluminum fixed. And, you know, it was, but only marginal. It wasn't like shockingly more expensive. That is exciting. Now, you got to tell me what color it was, and then I'll let you off the hook on the truck.
Well, we got white, so I'm a big white fan as far as the vehicle
he
color.
He likes to show the dirt, like he likes to have those like battle scars
crew cab.
Yeah, it's the full four door cab. So,
So let's point out the obvious, just in case any of our listeners haven't picked up on this. This is what RV owners do: they buy the bigger truck.
Oh, yeah, Brett, why did you buy the truck?
Because they want to buy a bigger RV.
Uh-huh.
Right? Okay.
Yeah,
so what's
you
in
know,
store for our future,
so what are you, what are you guys looking at?
Well, you know, we're starting that process. We've got an RV show coming up here in September in our local area, and then there's another one in February. So the September one's going to be our research. The February one's where we would probably actually target to maybe upgrade the trailer. And when I say maybe, we all know what's going to happen. So,
I have to say, whenever I talk to somebody about like these marital conversations, I just wish I could be a fly on the wall, like seeing that delicate dance, like who's the spender, who's the saver, who's pushing for the truck, who's resisting, you know?
Yeah. Okay, so then if you're going to your RV show in September, we want sort of the like report breakdown after
sure.
that.
We well, you want bunks,
hear,
right? I mean, you're
like,
looking...
what you saw, what you're not yeah. sure about, what you're deciding between. We need an RV show report.
Yeah, you're mm-hmm. going to have to give us an RV show yeah. report after that yep. Utah
Absolutely.
RV show.
Yep. We'll do it, yeah, because that's the one where we really want to go. We said, well, do we take our daughter with us? And we said for the September one, no. We want the time to be able to walk in and out of a bunch of floor plans and have a deep kind of philosophical discussion, if you will, around
oh,
the
we
utilization
will. We
of
understand.
The different. So
that's awesome. Yeah,
you know, very and fun. Then come September, we'll let the you know let our daughter go and you know beat it up and see
yeah,
if.
Yeah, you gotta let. Like,
well, no, that's how you get the price. That's
around.
How they drive. You drive the price down.
You right. know our theory.
I mean, with
Still
our three
like,
kids there,
we'll
it's like
give you this if you go away.
We'll rent a couple kids and bring them
yeah,
with us that
we'll
weekend.
We'll send ours out. We'll get it for real cheap.
Brett, it's been great having you back on the show. And
that is my pleasure.
We look
great to come
forward
back.
To having you back on the show this fall.
Yes, absolutely. Can't wait
to talk
next
about
chat.
The RV show and maybe another
yep,
campground.
Another campground.
Indeed, looking forward to it.
So thanks so much to Brett Nielsen. Do you want to give us your website again for anybody listening?
Yeah, it's brettnielsen.com. And you can find me on Instagram at Instagrablin.
Can you spell that for us?
Instagrablin.
Yeah, and he's easy to find if you go to our Instagram too. We regrammed him a lot, so you can find one of his
oh,
awesome
and
pictures.
Apparently, and you know, like through. Go RVing has regrammed him. By the way,
oh, did he get regrammed?
I was a little jealous. Got like 400 likes or something.
That's right.
That was
that's
a beautiful
right. yeah.
photo, by the way. So if you dig back on Go RVing's Instagram. You will find Brett. Was that around, what day was that? 4th of July, they put up your picture or something?
Yes, that was the flag one?
The flag one.
Yeah, so that was actually taken before the 4th, but that's when they regrammed it is from
yeah,
the
so, so head over to Go RVing's Instagram account. You can find Brett there too if you go back to the 4th of July. Yeah. Thank you so much, Brett.
Thanks,
you
Brett.
Bet. Thank
it was
you guys.
Good talking again.
Appreciate it. We'll see you.
Welcome back, everybody. We are pleased as punch to have our favorite Missouri correspondent, Carrie Cox, here with us. How are you?
I'm just fine.
Hi, well, Carrie.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
We're excited to hear about your big summer adventures.
We and apparently all of our listeners missed you. I think our
That's
listeners
right.
really like
we got
the
a, we got a couple emails saying, bring back those correspondents.
Bring back Birdie.
I might have paid my husband to do that.
Oh, that's why the messages were anonymous.
They were all from someone named the Privateer.
Yeah, that would be my son.
So give us like a broad overview of your big summer trip. You guys had a really epic, kind of awesome summer trip. Just give us a sense of where you went and where you stopped along the way.
Sure. I kind of call it the Southwest sampler platter because we just we spent 25 days on the road and tried to hit as much as possible as we could out west, kind of with the idea of, you know, we don't know if we'll ever make it that way again. And we wanted to see as much as we could in the time that we had. So we hit Santa Fe, New Mexico, Sedona, Arizona. And then in California, we went to Sequoia National Park and Yosemite National Park and went on over to see the Pacific Ocean and San Francisco. And then on our way back, we stopped at the Grand Canyon. So we just kind of got a sense of the West. And I had a Route 66 adventure guide that I used to kind of since we were following the old Route 66 path, we could kind of see some of the small towns and bizarre roadside attractions along the way, which was fun too.
Which guide do you use? Do you remember? Is it Tom? I want to say like Tom Knoll. I have one that I just bought
yeah.
recently. Anyway, if you don't know now, tell us after and we'll put it in the show notes so people
sure.
can see which book you use. So my gosh, there's so many highlights in this trip. It's hard to even know where to start. Let's skip ahead to Yosemite.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So where did you camp at Yosemite?
Sure. Pretty much anywhere when you go to camp to Yosemite, you have to be aware that you're going to stay probably about an hour outside of the main part of the valley. So there's a few choices. We picked the Groveland area, which is a small town maybe toward the northern part of Yosemite. And we stayed at a campground called Yosemite Ridge, which was a small private-owned campground with maybe 10 to 20 sites, but it was only $40 a night and served as a really nice, clean, quiet base camp. camp, and we really weren't in the campground very much. We just took off each day and drove into Yosemite and enjoyed the views along the way.
Right. I guess you're not going to Yosemite to hang out at the campground.
No.
I mean, that's a great point, too, right? Like, hey, let's spend the day at the campground after we drove this far.
Yeah. So what were some of the highlights for you in Yosemite?
Well, Yosemite, our first day, if you read on the blog, it was kind of overwhelming. Like, when you go to Yosemite, you have to know this is like the Disney World of national parks. There are a lot of people. And it was a huge park. So we were kind of overwhelmed at first, that first day. And we were hot and crabby. But it took us that day, kind of, it gave us a chance to get a feel for the land, the land, and figure out what we wanted to do the next day. And there's a lot of really short hikes that you can take, like just, you know, less than a quarter of a mile. You can walk up and just see a spectacular waterfall. Mm-hmm. So we saw a couple of those on the first day. But our absolute favorite thing that we did in Yosemite was floating the Merced River. This is something that you really can't do any time of year because the water has to be flowing pretty well. And so it's pretty much only in June or July that you can do this. And since it was about 95 degrees the week that we were in Yosemite, we decided that the river was the place to be. And I knew it was going to be pretty, but I was just really awed by every time you went around a corner on the river, there would be a new sight. And it was Half Dome and the Yosemite Falls and another waterfall. Just every single turn, there was just something new and mind-blowing to see.
Your pictures were stunning.
Yeah,
and I would tell everybody that's listening to the podcast to follow you on Instagram at Travels with Birdie. And they really, I mean, the pictures were stunning. Like, seeing those photographs, like, oh, I have to do this, right? You know, that's how I felt after looking. So did you rent a canoe, or how did that
work? There's only, they only have one vending service that they allow to put rafts on the river, and they're a big inflatable rubber raft. So I think they can hold four people. It was kind of expensive because it's $31 a person. And so we kind of went back and forth on whether or not to plunk down $125 for this, since we live in the Ozarks where we have lots of beautiful rivers nearby and we could float, you know, for $30. But we decided that was just the thing we needed to try out. And it was all about the location. And we feel like we definitely got our money's worth. It was totally worth it. So they put you, everybody on the river at one spot, and then everybody floats down to one takeout spot. And they definitely want to regulate it and keep that river looking beautiful and enjoyable. Sometimes the rivers back home, one of the bad things is, you know, you have sometimes a lot of drunk people, a lot of wildness on the river, but this, you know, they don't allow any of that. And so it was a really nice, peaceful float. The water was shallow enough that the kids could hop out and hop in and hop out and hop in and splash around. And it was just beautiful, crystal clear water.
About how long were you on the river?
I'd say it was probably about 3 to 4 hours, and you can kind
of.
That's a good, that's a good amount of time. That's good.
Yeah.
That also justifies that.
The
cost
money,
a little
right?
Bit more
I feel like you got the money's worth, and that's, you know, I just think that that's something that's tricky about family travel in general is that money factor. Like, there are so many things we've learned over the last 5 years that. Initially, I'm not a spender when you travel, and like those big ticket prices kind of freak me out.
We usually always think, oh, there's something for free to do instead.
Yeah, you know? But then we've learned that it's hard, but you can find the thing that, like, the one thing that's worth that $120
a day. Sounds like you guys did.
Yeah,
and we figured, you know, on this whole trip out of 25 days on the road, the only entertainment we paid for was our $80 National Parks Pass. So, you know, splurging on the river float definitely was fine.
good for you. Any other Yosemite highlights you want to talk about? If not, there's plenty else to talk about.
Sure. We one of the other places we really enjoyed was going up to Tuolumne Meadow. One of the things I was surprised about in Yosemite was kind of how I mentioned earlier, it was a little bit hot. I was expecting like Colorado crisp mountain air, but in the valley, you're just not in that kind of air. So we went on up to the meadow area where the elevation was a lot higher and the air had cooled off. And there's a hike there called Lambert Dome. And what was cool about this is it's just like this big granite boulder, you know, gigantic boulder. And you can kind of scurry up it. And it's definitely a workout getting to the top. But our boys just took off up this, you know, up this peak. We couldn't see them. We're like, we didn't know what was on the other side. We're like, are they going to get up there? And there's a cliff. You know, we didn't know what was up there. And so we were trying to scurry to catch up to them. But it was really cool because, you know, you felt pretty safe going up there. There weren't, even though it was this big dome, it wasn't a place where you could fall off. I mean, like, you just roll down the dome. Right. And
so, it was rounded.
Yeah, it was a nice round dome. You just roll down. So it was like a pretty cool, unique hike. And when you got to the top, you could see out, you know, it's all around you to these different peaks and overlooking the whole meadow area. And so that was a really fun hike.
Now, let me ask you this. You said that the size of the park was overwhelming. And you know, frankly, we felt that way with Great Smoky Mountains to some degree.
When you were saying that, I was remembering an exact conversation that we had.
We just said, we're going to have to come back. You know? I mean, was your feeling at the end of the trip like, there's so much more to see and I really want to come back? Or was the feeling more like, I want to go to a different national park, you know, next time?
Yeah, like, this was nice, but
is it a place that's calling you back?
Yeah, we got a feeling for it.
Because Acadia National Park calls us back, you know, like, we can go over and over again and there's still that pull. I'm just wondering how you felt at the end of your time in Yosemite.
There was definitely stuff we did not get to do. Like, I wish we chose not to do the Mist Trail because I made the mistake of Googling, like, how many people had died on this trail. And never, ever Google whether people have died on a trail before you hike it because it just sounded really scary because you're on these narrow steps and it's misty, you know. And I think that most of the people who had trouble had actually, you know, crossed over the fence and were in areas where they shouldn't have been. And
they did
stupid things. But still, once that image is in your head.
In Mount Washington, they actually have a list of everyone that's died on Mount Washington.
They do.
They publicly post.
And it's in multiple places because they're like people.
It was definitely
please.
At the top somewhere. And actually, very few of them are people that drive.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's people that hike. So let's talk about some of the other places on the trip. What were some of the other real highlights for you out of those different places where you stopped?
My favorite stop of the whole thing was Muir Woods, which is the grove of redwood trees just north of San Francisco. So we didn't get to go up into the whole area of redwoods in Northern California and Oregon and Washington. That's definitely on our list. But Muir Woods is a small patch that got protected and is still there. And it has the redwoods. And what I just loved about those in comparing Sequoia to Muir Woods is that in the Sequoias, you're under these tall trees and you see their massive bases, but it's not like you're in a forest really, you know, there's just like tall trees standing out, you know, separate and alone. And they just had a different feeling. But when you went into Muir Woods, you just kind of felt like you were in that cathedral. There was even a place that said, you know, please talk in a whisper here. This is, you know, a place for people to enjoy in peace. And so
we shouldn't bring our kids there.
Okay, so we'll check that one off the
list. In other words, the Puglisi family will have to wait a few years. We don't bring peace anywhere we hike.
But there was plenty to do. The Ranger's badge that you earn there, the super cool thing was that it was made out of redwood. So that is totally worth doing. And it even smelled really good because it smelled like a tree. Yeah, so we did, my youngest son did the Ranger's badge there. And really like that. That was just a magical place.
How about Route 66? I mean, gosh, we could just go on and on. Was there a quirkiest spot, a favorite highlight from Route 66?
We all had to stop and get our picture on the giant jackrabbit. I don't really know the history of why there's a giant jackrabbit.
But it's there, let's take a picture.
Harry, you're a librarian. So let's do a little research here. There probably is no reason why there's a gigantic jackrabbit. It's Route 66. People just stick strange things there, right?
My husband chatted up the lady at the trading post there, and she did say it was a new jackrabbit that the original had worn down over the years of all the people. But you get this giant fiberglass jackrabbit, get your picture taken. We enjoyed driving by the Wigwam Hotel, and that was kind of cool.
I remember seeing the pictures of those cars that are stuck in the ground and you can paint graffiti on. I remember you had some Instagram photos there. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that was like way back at the beginning of our trip. I forgot all about that. That was
happens.
I know. Cadillac Ranch is kind of like a art piece. I guess these I think the description I read was that they were like hippie architect artist or something, you know. So they buried Cadillacs out in the desert, or not really in the desert, but out in a field near Amarillo, Texas. And over the years, it became a place where people went to spray paint them, I guess maybe as vandalism at first, but then that just became part of the thing, you know. So now it's open to the public. It's free. Bring your own spray paint and just paint away.
And you did it like a Birdie Was Here or something like that?
Yeah, we've spray painted Birdie Was Here out in front of the cars. And my son's made a cool video on YouTube that you can see of get a sense of Cadillac Ranch.
So everybody got to express their inner graffiti artist there.
They did. I mean, if you're trying to entertain a 10-year-old and 13-year-old boy, you know, give them spray paint, let them spray paint on some cars.
I think our boys would love that at age six, except they'd spray paint Wesley.
Yeah, it would go bad.
So what did you learn about your family on this trip? What insights did you kind of gain into your family unit after spending, you know, what, 25 days?
I'll put you on the spot here.
I mean, I always feel like I come back from a trip like that, having learned the new things or confirming things I already thought. What was the takeaway as a family?
I was really, really proud of us. Before this trip, our boys would get in fights sometimes in the backseat of the car on the 7-minute car ride home, you know? So we were imagining that, you know, this trip we were in the car at least 60 hours, and I wasn't sure how that was going to go. And our tow vehicle just has a back seat. There's not a third row. There's, you know, not a lot of room back there. And they were in there a long, long time in the back seat, but they were lovely. They were beautiful children for the most part. You know, there was only one knockdown, drag out fight. And that was like on the way home where there was maybe some pinching in the back seat.
And one knockdown, drag out fight in 25 days of RVing. I'll take that every time.
That's good. Those are good stats.
I'll take that for a week's vacation.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
Yeah, I cannot believe it. And so they...
What was their takeaway, Carrie? Like, do you feel... Like, what is their... I mean, you know, anything that they would be comfortable sharing. What was their opinion of the trip?
Yeah, my older son definitely was into it. I think he really appreciates... he understood where we were going, and he understood that these were all these national parks and what amazing things we were doing. And he took a lot of really cool pictures. He's a cool photographer. And our younger son, he was really just kind of, he's our homebody, our video game player. And, you know, we kind of hid from him how often we would be without Wi-Fi on the trip.
Ah, that's terrific.
I kind of had a sense. He kept saying, you know, do the campgrounds have Wi-Fi? And, you know, I answered honestly, yes. They do, but honestly, it never works.
Not for playing video games.
Yeah.
No. So we weren't sure how he was going to do, and he ended up really just being a trooper and finding things he enjoyed. There were several hikes, you know, where my husband and I like poked each other and we're like, look, he's enjoying this. He's having fun, you know? And now, like, if you ask him, he wouldn't say, yeah, it was the best thing of my life, but he'll tell you things that he enjoyed, and we know he enjoyed it.
But that's terrific, though, you know, like, to take your kid, you know, it's always a risk when you take your kids out of their comfort zones and you don't know what's going to happen. So it's so nice to know that you pushed them out of a comfort zone and it went really well for the most part.
And you know what? And success doesn't mean everyone necessarily had the best time of their life when you're raising kids.
Well,
right?
in 10 years, you might look back and say it was the best time, or in 20 years. I mean, you know, it's he might emotion recollected in tranquility. Correct?
Yeah, so we hope so.
How did Birdie do on the trip? And Birdie, for those of you who don't remember from the last time we had Carrie on, Birdie is the nickname for your Jayco travel trailer.
That's right. Yep, there's a big bird on the side, and birds travel, so why can't we, you know? She did great. We weren't really, you know, again, the most we had camped before this trip was 10 days, and not even all at once. We had done three nights was our most. So going out 25 days was pretty untested. We really didn't know what, you know, what to expect.
I did not know that you went from like a 3-day to that 3-week without that kind of 1-weeker in between.
We're going to start calling her Carrie the Brave.
I'm impressed. I am impressed.
It was just kind of like we felt like, you know, we just had to. Like, I really wanted to go to Yosemite. And who knows, you know, you never know what's going to happen in the future. Let's just do it. And so we did. And we really, the trailer was fine. We kind of figured out our little organizational systems for keeping pull out this, put out that. You know, we never did get really good at keeping the refrigerator thing figured out. Our refrigerator won't run on propane anymore. And We ended up not being able to cook a lot because
That's what warranties are for, Carrie. Yeah. If you still have one.
Oh, we don't. We bought a used trailer.
Oh, okay. So. Okay. But, well, it might be, an easy fix.
Yeah. Did you use the stove? Did you turn on the stove to pull the propane through?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So you did all that. All right.
Yeah. So we're we still got a little bit of tinkering to figure out with that, but we didn't end up cooking a lot because a lot of the campgrounds, one thing people might want to know is when you're at some of the national parks, you are pretty far from civilization. And so like at Yosemite, we were 30 minutes from a small town where we could go get some supper, but like there wasn't even fast food in that town. There were some small, you know, small businesses, which we prefer anyway, but there weren't big grocery stores or much around there. Same thing at Sequoia. You have some kind of small thing. So if you have kind of special things that you're wanting to get to cook or have nearby, you're sometimes
preparation matters a lot, right? Yeah, I mean, that sounds a lot more remote than Great Smoky Mountains, that's for sure.
It was, yeah.
Absolutely. And you inspired us with Great Smoky Mountains, too, when we were there, because you had recommended Chimneys to us, mm-hmm. which we loved and adored. Yeah. So thank you for that recommendation. So what are your big plans for fall camping and for camping next summer? Are we dreaming of another big trip?
Yeah, as you might know, I think it's a thing with RVers that you're not even home from the first trip when you start thinking, hey, where should we go next?
That's right.
Yeah. We decided that next summer we needed to maybe not have such a hectic pace, mm-hmm. and just kind of maybe go somewhere and park it. We're going to go, I think we're going to spend a week maybe in Carbondale, Colorado, and maybe a week up in Estes Park, and just kind of relax next summer, but still
slower
in a cool
pace, less driving.
Right.
Yeah. The driving can be, you know, be wearing, right? Yeah. I mean, particularly with kids, and that's a challenge. Yeah. We all want to go to these huge national parks, but those drives are taxing and tough.
Yeah. And the cost of the gas, you know. So Colorado is only two short days of driving for us. So we're really lucky in that respect.
And you'd spend some time in the national park, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we went to Estes Park a few years ago, but we only maybe had 2 days in the park because really we were actually in Colorado Springs and had just went up to Estes Park for a couple of days, not realizing that was going to knock our socks off and be our favorite part of the trip, you know?
Oh, good advice for us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a campground picked out for Estes Park already, or are you not that far?
It's hard. The campground we stayed when we went with my in-laws was Spruce Lake, and we liked it. I mean, I think it was kind of a crowded campground. It's not, not a very natural looking one. And, but it's been getting some bad, mm-hmm. negative reviews I've noticed. So I don't know if it's kind of gone downhill. So we're kind of nervous, and they're very expensive. Anything around Estes Park, you're going to pay, you know, $60 to $70 a night. And,
East Coast prices, Carrie.
Yeah. Yeah. So none of those look really great. But in Carbondale, I think one of your followers had recommended to us the Carbondale KOA.
Okay,
and it
great.
Just looks beautiful. It's like on a river and looks like it has some nice, beautiful trees, but still also has lots of amenities. So we're really looking forward to checking out that.
Cool.
That
KOA. We will have you back on the show before then.
Yes.
And we'll keep up with your fall adventures. So thank you so much for joining us again.
Well, thank you for having
me. Yeah, I feel like we just scratched the surface of this huge trip. So if you want to learn more, is it travelswithbirdie.com?
It is, and I'm still in the midst of blogging. I just got through our first 2 days at Yosemite, so there's still some more blogging to come from this trip. When we got back from the trip, I started grad school. I have a doctoral program, so I had to throw myself into school. Didn't get to do as much blogging, but it's kind of fun to savor. Yeah, it's fun to savor it, go back through those pictures and think about those.
Carrie takes great pictures. Mm-hmm. If you're curious about this trip or you want to see more about what the family did, it's all on travelswithbirdie.com.
Yeah, and
there's
scroll
more
through
coming.
Her feed on Instagram.
Yeah, and check her out on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Carrie.
Thank you.
We'll talk soon.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of RVFTA Dispatches from Glacier and Yosemite.
And thank you so much to Carrie and Brett for coming on and telling us all about their amazing adventures.
You brought it to life for us, Brett and Carrie. We can't wait to get out west ourselves.
I know. Jealous.
All right, so look for us at Hershey and join us at our fall rally.
Yep,
see you next week.
Make your reservations. Bye-bye.